All right, we're live. You should be able to see that now, guys.
Yeah, I keep forgetting to click on the honestly, here's where I was. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Screencast. I'm your host, Nick Scarpino. I keep dropping like little bits of water from this nice Coke Zero onto my desk. And the only thing I have to clean it up with are these wonderfully lotioned tissues. But every time I wipe the desk off, it makes my desk moisturized. So now I'm fast. Anyway, what's up, everyone? Welcome to Screencast. I'm Nick Scarpino. Today joining me, of course, are the movie bros yourself, Joey Noel.
Hello, still with my comically tall mic.
I love it. It's rose gold and beautiful.
Thank you.
And I like how you've matched sort of like the robe back there, whatever you have, to the rose gold motif. It is lovely. Of course, also joining us today is Kevin, the big dog, Coelho. There it is. Hold on, I'm going to click off this little thing here. Lots of fun news today, guys. And we're actually going to do a little fun and something else a little fun. We're bringing back a big topic at the end of the show. Blessing is going to be joining us, joining me rather, to talk about Psych 2, Lassie Comes Home. Here's how it worked out. We were on the production call last week and I was like, just randomly threw a Hail Mary out. I was like, does anyone like Psych? And Joey and Kevin were like, nerd.
But no, Blessing, I responded that I've seen the first like three seasons and that I do like it, but I'm not caught up.
That's okay. I mean, honestly, on this movie you don't need to be caught up, but Blessing blew me away. He was like, dude, I've watched the show like twice through and I've watched all the movies, and he was like, I'm excited for Lassie Come Home. And I was like, well, obviously you're in my boat where we're excited for it, but the second we don't see any promotional thing for it, we totally forget about it, because guess what, the movie's out. I watched it 2 weeks ago. I watched it again last night. Blessing watched it last night. So we're going to talk about it a little bit and obviously probably just devolve into a discussion about Psych. That's at the tail end of the show. If you're watching this, you came for this. If that's the headline, you can fast forward to that. We'll put the time code down below. Before that, of course, we're going to get to some news and some stuff we've been watching and the Nick List. We're going to your suggestions, our suggestions, what we thought of last week's Nick Lists. We're just basically reviewing a lot of movies on this show. And guess what? I freaking love it. Of course, this week's episode is brought to you by kindoffunny.com/store, where you can get this hat and all sorts of, I think you might be able to get this shirt also still on it. This is the Cool Greg I Am the Night shirt. I love it. It freaks people out when you wear it at a bank, which I discovered this morning.
Wait, why?
It's just funny. People are like, what is that shirt? I'm like, imagine me in just this, just the face mask. You see just this massive, essentially nomadic beard that I have here, this like post-apocalyptic Cormac McCarthy the road beard peeking out from underneath it, and then just a severed hand on my shirt that says I Am the Night, and I walk in camo sweats.
All right, yeah, I know you're selling it. I get it now.
This is quite the picture you're painting.
It's like I'm either an eccentric billionaire or I'm gonna eat part one of your organs for food. That's where we're at right now. Shout out to our Patreon producers, Mohammed and Al the Predator Tribesman, or Momo Squared, and
there you go.
As I'm now calling him. We love you guys very, very much. If you want to support this show by just doing more than watching, and by the way, watching is just good enough, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel you're watching this on right now. Or if you're listening to this in podcast services, please give us a good rating and tell your friends. It's pretty fun. And of course, you can always go over to patreon.com/kindoffunny and back us at any tier. Even $1 is fantastic. We love you very much. $5 gets you to be a part of the show. You can suggest stuff we watch. Just like this week, we have Vinny Vincent has suggested that we watch some fun stuff. And also Bran has said, hey, man, have you guys been following Comic-Con? Apparently it's happening. That's a fun one. I kind of haven't. It's a weird year. What are you going to say? All right, guys, let's go into some fun news. How does that sound for both of you today?
Sounds great.
Great. As you guys do know, weird Comic-Con stuff was happening. And there's also like a fan con and a Justice Con and all sorts of stuff. Either way, some interesting stuff came out about the Snyder Cut last week. Not really interesting, just an interesting pull of a quote. This came from Screen Rant. He said, Zack Snyder won't use any footage shot by Joss Whedon in his upcoming cut of the Justice League. The filmmaker didn't mince words when asked if there's a chance that scenes he didn't film will be included in the upcoming version of the movie's release next year on HBO Max. Appearing on a panel for a fan-organized Justice Con, Snyder was asked about rumors that he'd use some of Whedon's scenes in Justice League, especially the director denied, expectedly, the director denied this, even going as far as to say that he'd rather ruin the film before using footage he didn't shoot himself. Quote, I'd destroy the movie before I used a single frame that I didn't photograph. That is a fucking hard fact. I'd blow the fucking thing up. Hard enough. You know what's funny?
Real aggressive shit is what's going on.
I get it. I get it. Like, you finished principal photography. For all intents and purposes, he was I'm assuming if everything that I was correct, that he finished the actual photography and was had to exit the production during post. So imagine you shoot something you think is going to be one way, and then people are like, no, we're bringing someone in, and he's going to completely redo your work. I'd be pissed too. I would be completely pissed. I get it. Of course, the movie's going to be set to be a 2-hour and 14-minute runtime right now. We'll see if that changes at all, and we'll see how they release it on HBO Max. But I'll be honest with you right now. I'm fascinated by this. I have been following the story, obviously, cursory since the dropping of it. And it's fun to make fun of, obviously. but seeing how fired up he is about this and realizing that this is going to be just a completely different thing, I'm absolutely fascinated. And I got to be honest with you, Kev. I've bought the ticket. I'm taking the ride. I can't.
Oh, I mean, again, we do not have a choice. We are watching this because of work.
Watching the shit out of this. All 3 hours and 46 minutes, or how many hours is 2:14? What does that break down to? 3 hours and some change.
Yeah. Wait. What did you say? 3:14? No, my God, Jesus, that's not
2:14,
right.
2:14.
Okay. 2:14. Yeah. 3 hours and 44 minutes.
That's a lot of Batman. I'm in. Let's go.
Unnecessary amount of Batman.
I don't think this is anything we didn't know before, by the way. But
yeah. No, just so interesting to hear him be so like blunt about how he feels about everything, because I feel like he's been pretty cagey.
Yeah. Well, what I'm fascinated by is I read the story originally wrong. I thought he was not going to use anything that was released in theaters. That's incorrect, obviously. Joss Whedon had some footage that he had shot before, presumably. So I was like, holy shit, this is going to be like every single frame in this movie is something we hadn't seen before. That I was wrong about that, because I think I talked about that on the podcast yesterday. I misread the story. Evidently, he's just being like, I know I'm just going to use only the stuff that I shot, and which includes, I assume, any and all stuff they've had to do in post or reshoots, which I think they're doing. But then I read something else that said they're not doing any reshoots, but whatever. They got $40 million to spend on this bad boy. Let's get it done. Let's get Superman into the dark charkoal Superman suit.
Did you see the pictures?
Yeah, it's fucking dope. Apparently there was footage, but I couldn't find it this morning. He showed like a 30-second teaser of him just in the suit.
Yeah.
And apparently there's another trailer coming in August.
Alfred, right, or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in the bat suit.
Hey, why the hell not?
It didn't do much for me. I'm very curious to see.
It didn't do much for me either.
Yeah. I just wish he had long hair.
I also know this is not my thing.
Yeah.
So to me, there's a part of me now that has turned a corner on this, and there's a film purist part of me that goes, maybe we just need this for history. Like, I just now want to, like, I'm kind of coming around to Snyder's side and being like, I do want to see him, no matter what it ends up being, and I'm sure we'll have our criticisms, or maybe not, maybe we'll like it, who knows. But I'm sure we'll have, it'll be interesting to talk about either way. But I do think that I've turned a corner now where I think that it's kind of cool that they're giving him this opportunity to at least do this cut of it. Similar to how, like, you'd see, you know, Ridley Scott being able to do his final cut of Blade Runner, things like that. Now, of course, I reserve the right to completely bash this film when it comes out, but that'll be based on its merits. It'll be based on the film itself, and it'll also be based on how much it makes Greg Miller cry, which you always know. The more it's going to make Greg cry, the more Kevin and I are going to go hard on it. So that's just how it's going to
go. Do you think he's going to cry?
Greg?
Yeah.
The thing with Greg crying is he cries when he's happy, he cries when he's sad, he cries when he's like,
so the odds are good.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, like I say, there's a 98% shot. Yeah,
I just really hope it's good. Like, I hope that we're all.
But I feel like you
don't
want good tears. You want sad tears.
No. I honest to God want this to be good. I want this to be good. The end of the DC universe as we know it, and they just, you know, blink it out of existence.
Well, it's not the end. Apparently, they're still doing the other movies, so we'll see what happens.
No, I mean, like, Wonder Woman is done, right? At this point, it would have been released.
84 is done. Supposedly, they're still doing the Flash movie there, right?
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. Stuff seems kind of weird.
We'll see. Yeah. I don't know. At this point, like, it's funny. It's what a difference a month makes. Well, last month, I was like, we don't need this. And now I'm like, there's nothing to watch on TV. Fucking let's put this out. No. This is 3 hours and 46 minutes of pandemic time that I could fill. Just watching this
though, like, just start watching Avatar The Last Airbender. That's a way better way to fill your time. Damn it, I forgot to
I have and audience. I'm trying to talk Tim into letting us do Avatar in review. I shouldn't have said that online, but I'm doing it right now.
It's okay. I forgot to mute us afterwards and they heard us talk about it briefly.
Okay, good. Yeah, I started, I'm like 4 episodes in because Blessing recommended it, and I was like, dude, this is actually a really good show. We should really potentially good. Like watch it. Like maybe I don't want to do every episode or every three episodes. I'd probably do it by season, just being like season one, season two, season three, because it goes fast.
Yeah.
But it's actually surprisingly a deep show.
Or we do The Office. We just commit.
I say we do The Office and we do every episode.
I mean, I'm going to pitch Blessing on Psych and review at the end of this. Spoilers. And there's eight seasons of that. And two movies now. And an extra episode that I totally forgot about that I've never seen called Psych the Musical, which is just a whole musical episode. It's a prequel to the entire show.
Really? That's that. Yeah. That last part got me, the prequel. That's cool.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until I looked it up yesterday. And it's episode one, season zero. So it actually apparently it's like supposed to be beforehand. I love the Psych universe. It is great. Next news story for you guys. Do you guys see the Emmy nominations came out?
I did yesterday, right?
Monday. Yeah, I just wanted to go through some of these with you guys and see, because I know we've watched a lot of these shows. This is from IndieWire. I mean, I'm sure you guys can Google it and see the whole thing if you want to go to IndieWire. They have it all nicely compiled here by Ann Donahue. The pull quote from this is Netflix leads the way with 160 nominations, HBO right behind them with 107, including 26 for Watchmen at the 70.
Damn.
Joe, did you watch Watchmen?
No, I haven't. Watchmen is what was the other thing I had on my list? Watchmen is kind of at the top of my HBO list now.
But... I mean, what's your background with Watchmen comics?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay. Have you seen the movie?
No.
Are you planning on doing either?
Not really?
Yeah, I don't think you're gonna get anything out of Watchmen if you do it this way.
You, if you're not gonna watch the movie, you have to watch the movie first, because this is a direct sequel.
And then read a small synopsis of how the comic book actually ends.
Or just read the comic book. You're not gonna do any of this. It's worth it.
I might watch the movie.
Read the synopsis, or else it won't make any sense. You'll be like, "What squids?"
The thing about it is this. The movie, obviously done based on the source material by Alan Moore and directed by Zack Snyder, speaking of the devil, I think it's a great movie. It's one of those one of those instances where when people start bashing Zack Snyder for being a quote-unquote bad director, I always point them to Watchmen, and I'm like, he's not. Mm-hmm. When he has material that works for his style, it gets a very, in my opinion, elevated movie out of it.
I feel like 300 is the same feeling a perfect example for that.
Yeah. I love 300. I know it's thin and it's mostly just visual, but
so was the comic.
Got me. Comic's like super short, but yeah, that works for me. I think Watchmen's just a cool. And then I was very obviously remiss when they said, Damon Lindelof's going to take the mantle. I was like, oh, great. This is going to go on forever and never have a conclusive ending. And it's just going to, but man,
don't hit on loss.
You know what? When I'm wrong, I'm wrong, Kevin. What have I always said? I'll be the first to admit I'm wrong. I never double down.
Yep.
Never. You they always call say me that. Never double down, yep. Nick. They say, Nick, you can change your opinion whenever you want.
I've never heard you double down.
Mm-hmm. Never double down. Watchmen season one. And I'm hoping it's the only season. I know they're doing a second, but it's phenomenal.
They aren't. They said that
they were going to try to continue it, but not with Damon Lindelof.
No, they were saying like that they're interested in continuing it.
Yeah, that even means if they want that money.
Yeah, but I have a feeling that they can wait 10 years and make a season two and like the internet go wild.
Do something different. Yeah. Well, either way, it was, in my opinion, I think it's a perfect like mini series. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. Some other notable things in here that Hugh Jackman got nominated for Bad Education, which I was like, fuck yeah, he should absolutely get that. Did you guys end up watching that HBO movie?
Not yet.
That was
it's on my never ending list. Dude, I don't know how both of you do this, watching three movies for this plus both in review movies.
And then we throw in random stuff. To be fair, I don't watch all the movies. You guys have noticed that I will make sure I try to steer the conversation toward movies I've already seen on the odd chance that I run out of time. Whiplash.
Oh my God. Are you saying you've seen Whiplash or you didn't see Whiplash?
Oh, I've seen Whiplash.
I can't wait to talk about that movie.
I unfortunately didn't watch it again this week because I watched Just Mercy and I was like, fuck, that movie was like impactful. Yeah. And I was like, I can't watch another hard movie like this. This was, that movie sat with me for a while. I was like, I got to sit with this for a little bit. But I saw Whiplash in theaters. Phenomenal. Anyway, we'll get to that in a little bit. It's interesting. I've seen, going through this list, I'm like, I've seen a lot of shows. Ozark got nominated a bunch. The Crown got nominated a bunch. Euphoria, which I haven't watched yet, and that's another one that
real good.
It pops up again. I'm watching it. I gotta remember to watch that show. I do love it a lot.
some of these are interesting where it's like the Eugene Levy for Schitt's Creek. It's like, man, I hate that show so much.
Dude, that show, whenever anyone brings up Schitt's Creek, it is for whatever reason, Joe, it's the most polarizing divisive show I've ever heard in my entire life.
Oh, really?
You either love it or hate it. Yeah, D did not like it. And as you guys know, if D doesn't like something in this house, it puts a damper on it for the rest of my life. I can't watch it. Kevin, you're married. You understand. But I think Makuga loves it. I've heard people love it. People in the chat right now are saying it's great.
It's not. Cool Greg it's loves really it. Bad.
Does he?
Yeah, Cool Greg loves it. I think it's just the style. I think it's just
It's comedy, it's not, right? You either love it or hate it. Did you watch any of it?
No, again, once D poo-poos something,
I think you should watch one episode just because the acting is some of the worst I've seen.
Well, I love Eugene Levy. I will always love
him. And Catherine O'Hara is so
great.
Good, too.
He's great.
Yeah, that's the 1-2 punch. But, you know, sometimes, Catherine O'Hara from, she's from
not in this.
Home Alone and Beetlejuice. And from a bunch of other movies from the last three decades.
I'm excited to see Outstanding Variety Talk Series last week tonight with John Oliver. That show, I think, 10 out of 10, you can... Sorry, my headphones are delayed. You can see most of his clips on YouTube. They just upload them all, which is so really good. Move. Yeah.
Yeah, I generally don't watch it because on Sundays I'm like, I just don't want to relive the week's news. But I know he's brilliant.
Well, it's not
the way that he goes into it, though, is really cool. Yeah, it's way more, it's closer to Patriot Act of like, hey, we're gonna dive deep onto one topic thing and tell you all the things that they're not actually reporting on.
Okay, maybe I've got that show pegged incorrectly. Cool. Well, look, kind of looking forward to this actually because I've seen a lot of these shows, which is for the first time, kind of cool. But we'll see. Who knows? I'll probably go back to making fun of the Emmys. But shout out to Drucker. His show got nominated. Samantha Bee got nominated for a bunch, so he got nominated for an Emmy, which is cool.
That's awesome.
Very excited about that. Next news story. This popped up a few days ago. I'm sorry, guys. We're a little late on this. And obviously, also, by the way, hey, welcome to Screencast. It's not Internet Explorers this week like it's supposed to be, just because we wanted to do the psych review earlier rather than later. That's why. Hailee Steinfeld has been cast as Kate Bishop. This was rumored at 99%. And then by an article over on MCUCosmic.com, they said they updated it and said in the last 90 minutes since the story ran, the 99% went to 100% as the contract has now been signed. Marvel Studios has their Kate Bishop officially, and it is Hailee Steinfeld. I'm not familiar with Kate Bishop. I know she plays the new Hawkeye. Is she Hawkeye's daughter? Is that what it is?
No, I don't believe so.
No, maybe? Okay.
I don't think so.
I thought she was, but maybe I'm getting that confused with people's theories about the MCU movies, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but because Hawkeye's last name isn't Bishop, right?
No, you're right. No.
Yeah,
I don't know why. I don't know where the fuck I got that from. Well, either way.
No, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like
they were talking about
look-alike.
People, like,
or, you know,
with how Endgame starts.
Oh, right. With his young daughter learning to shoot an arrow.
Yeah.
People in the chat are like, that site is not exactly known for the best news sources. Let me look that up again then.
I'm seeing that it's heavily rumored.
Let's go to a more... this hasn't been picked up by...
If this is true, this is awesome.
Tim and I talked about this at length, and Tim's dialed in into the...
He did, but I'm not... Usually I'll see this. Oh, Screen Rant has it picked up. Let's see. That's May 9th, and that was a while back. We'll just mark this one in the rumored category until the Hollywood Reporter or Screen Rant or some a slightly more venerable website picks it up. But be cool either way. Hailee Steinfeld joining the MCU, I'm all for. Why the fuck not, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, she's obviously been like a fan favorite casting choice for this role for a while. And now that I've seen a few more things with her in it, because like back when this had originally broken, I hadn't seen Bumblebee and I was like, oh, okay. Kind of get your vibe a little bit better because before I only knew her from... Pitch Perfect. I was like, this is a weird choice. but I think that she'd be really fun.
So you got to go back and watch True Grit then.
I just didn't realize that was her.
11?
Yeah. So that's the movie that broke her. That's the one that was like basically I would kind of equate it to Natalie Portman in The Professional of just kind of like for some reason just knocking out of the fucking park with a very, very cool movie and held her own with, you know, across from Jeff Bridges, which is not easy, doing his best cowboy grit, you know, John Wayne reenactment. So she did a great job, and she's a phenomenal actor, and that's going to be good. Cool. That was it for the big news that I had right now. And by big news, I mean I didn't pull any more news stories. Chat, let me know if there's anything we missed.
That AMC thing is kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I saw you put that in there. I didn't read the full of it. I kind of glossed over all the theater news that happened. Joe, do you want to surmise it for us? Want
to
just
summarize
it?
I would love to. They've pretty much just come to an agreement that they're shortening the window between like premium VOD and theater releases. So instead of normally it's like 3 months before you can get it digitally. Now it's like less than 3 weeks.
How long is that going to be going for? Is that like indefinite?
As far as I remember, there wasn't like a end date on this, but it was
17 days, right?
Yeah, 17 days. There
that's,
we go.
That's wild. That's
crazy. So short.
Yeah.
I love it.
But I guess very interesting to see them come back to agreeing to this after being like, hey, by the way, we're not showing Universal movies because you guys just decided to release Trolls.
Yeah, I think that must be just a sign of the times, right? Let's put it this way. Everyone had a different mindset a month ago or 2 months ago when Trolls came out than they do now. Now everyone's being like, oh shit, we're all in this together. We got to figure out a way to make this work going forward. So it's good to see that big theater chain.
It is a multi-year agreement, I guess. So there is some sort of end date. I just didn't see it in the article.
Yeah, my guess is that they're going to – I would guess they wouldn't want this to be forever. Because that really does cut into profits. When you know that a movie is going to be available 17 days after it comes out of theaters as opposed to 3 months, then you're like, maybe I won't go to theaters after all for it.
Yeah.
But
the option to capitalize on its new freedom with mid-budget fare. If smaller movies perform better than expected, Universal can wait to put it on digital rental services.
Yeah.
So
cool.
That'll be interesting. So that'll be Jurassic World, Fast and Furious, Halloween, Minions for the kiddos, stuff like that. Exciting.
That's very exciting. Very cool. Now it's time to take a break, ladies and gentlemen, to tell you about our sponsor, kindoffunny.com/store is where you go to get all your cool, kind of funny stuff. Also, Tim wanted us to sponsor Kevin's Twitter feed. Please go to Kind of Funny Kevin on Twitter and follow him, because apparently he's tweeting again, and that makes the whole world happy.
Apparently, Phil, how do you feel about that?
I'm not tweeting again.
Have you asked me how I'm feeling about it?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I forget that Kevin is like back and forth with social media. Kevin will be gone for weeks, and then he pops back up. What I did not appreciate is that I woke up the other morning to a picture of a screen cap of Kevin's Instagram picture from my mom. I forget what she said, but I was like, why am I seeing this on every avenue
My life? Was it the picture that I posted on Monday?
Yep.
Oh. You know,
I forget what she was saying.
Your mom...
Oh, I think she was talking about how Cecil was so big.
Oh, yeah, Cecil's growing big. Your mom liked my picture that I posted today, which was a drawing of that said picture. And I was like, I didn't think about Joey's mom seeing that picture.
I don't know. My mom's seen way weirder things that we've posted and talked about. So,
here we go.
Her mom has been acquainted with me for a few years now, so I'm sure she understands. We run the gamut of weird shit that we put on the internet.
Yeah, but I feel like when I post a picture of, in my underwear, I definitely was like, well, my mom's going to see this. My in-laws are going to see this. But I didn't think Joey's mom was going to see this, you know?
Yeah, that's a hard one. Because your mom, my mom called me yesterday and she was like, I'm watching your review of The Prestige right now. And I was like, damn, you're going deep on Kind of Funny content right now.
Oh my God.
She's like, I'm basically going to follow along. I started watching the Christopher Nolan movies. And I was like, dude, that's fucking awesome.
That's hilarious.
When I say crazy shit, my mom is just used to it. Hey, and that's how it is.
Who are these RKG guys? Where is Kevin?
No, she really liked their British accents.
Sure.
She appreciated that.
I get that. I didn't want to make a big thing out of it.
She did say, and this is where, and I love my mom to death, but she does not follow us that closely. She said, I really, really liked it when Andy made himself real big and put himself all over the screen. And I was like, I was like, we liked it too. And then she goes, yeah. And then that other Andy is great. So I think my mom thinks there's two Andys for Kind of Funny. And I didn't have the heart to tell her that your name was Kevin because I don't think she cares.
We've met several times. She does.
You have to understand, though, my mom still calls me Matt. So
I mean, it's hard. I often call Thomas Cecil and Cecil Thomas.
It's difficult.
Does your throw names mom out there. Call you pets? Because that's where I'm at. I don't have siblings. My mom sometimes will just be like, Joanna, stop barking. And I'm like, excuse me, mom.
I used to get that a lot. I used to get when my mom had a couple dogs because she has that reaction where she has to be the one, unfortunately, to tell people, like, to be the disciplinarian, as my dad would go out to the garage and just chill and like fix an old guitar amp or something like that. So yeah, my mom used to yell at us all the time. She used to call me Max every once in a while, which was our old dog's name. And I was like, I'm fine with it. That's cool. I used to think of myself as Max from Robotech. Done. He was cool. He was the best pilot in all of the UN Spacey.
Long ad that was.
That was, ladies and gentlemen. That's the ad. Go to kindoffunny.com/store. Buy our shit. It's dope and it fits well. Next segment of the show is a little segment we like to call What We've Been Watching. I'm going to kick this off for you guys. I talked a little bit about these two movies that I watched last weekend, but I watched a movie called Death Becomes Her, which is a Robert Zemeckis film, which so is good. Hard to believe. It is good. It's weird that actually I was like, this movie is not going to hold up. And it was oddly enjoyable, even though it's very, very thin on plot and does not make – it's more of just like zany than I remember it being, which is good.
Super campy.
Very campy. If you're not familiar with it, it's Meryl Streep, Goldie Hawn, and Bruce Willis. And it's a weird, fun, campy, silly, horribly dark movie that has some interesting undertones. I recommend it. No. And then on top of that, I watched Dick Tracy, which I was like, I haven't seen this movie in years. I remember loving this movie. I could not get through 20 minutes of it. I was very, very disappointed that the Dick Tracy movie doesn't hold up. While it's beautiful from a production standpoint and I think it should be taught as a masterclass of production design, it is a terrible, terrible story. There's no story whatsoever. The editing is horrible. And you can just see that this movie was just fraught with production problems and challenges. But when you're a kid, I was like, everything's colorful. It's fucking great. And watching it back and forth, I was like, they should have gotten Tim Burton to direct this, which you could tell they wanted to, but they didn't get a chance to. What do you guys been watching?
I started watching, and I haven't finished it yet because it's apparently 3 hours and like 40 minutes. Gone with the Wind.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, wow. Paul was like, I've never watched Gone with the Wind. I was like, I don't think I've watched it since I was like 7. So let's rewatch it. They hand wave a lot of racism stuff out of the way.
Doesn't age well.
Yeah, no, where they're just like, oh man, I can't believe the North's coming and ruined the South. And it's like, well, is that how that's happening? Is that what's going down? But
she runs a plantation. Scarlett O'Hara?
O'Hara.
O'Hara runs a plantation, right?
It's
like her parents.
Yeah, and she takes over it once everyone has been, all the slaves have been sent to fight for the South. Really sad.
Interesting.
So it's like two people at that point when she's running it. And now it's growing back. But,
Did you start watching it because of, what's her name, dying this week?
No. Who died?
Oh. The woman that plays Melanie in Gone with the Wind. I can't remember what her name is off the top of my head.
Yeah.
She was 104 and she died this week.
Pray for her.
Olivia de Havilland. Thank you.
No, we just turned on HBO Max. No. Another movie we watched. Hold on. It was When Harry Met Sally. And Rob in Reiner, it.
Classic.
And yeah, that was pretty good, actually. Like, there's a lot of, dated things of, oh, God, what's his face? It's just Billy Crystal is just such an annoying prick for so much of it.
Oh, yeah.
But it also, so many of the things that happen, you're like, oh, every movie, rom-com does this. And then it's like, well, or was this the first one to do it where, they introduce the best friends to each other. So they're like, oh, you can date. Yeah. But then they fall in love. Anyways.
Well, and by the way, those best friends are Bruno Kirby and Carrie Fisher, which is great.
Yeah,
Carrie Fisher is phenomenal in this.
Yeah, she was actually really good in this.
I might be pulling this out of my ass, but Carrie Fisher was. Are you guys are you aware that she was a script doctor for a very long time in Hollywood?
Mm-hmm.
Like she used to actually like go in and do uncredited rewrites on people's scripts for a very long time. I think she might have written on this a little bit, which I could be wrong about, but she's great in this. Bruno Kirby's great in this. And then of course watching this and then seeing City Slickers where Billy Crystal and Bruno Kirby come back to be on screen again. I was like, this, that always was a little touching moment for me where I'm like, oh, you guys like working with each other. That's cool. And this was one of those movies that when I watched when I was younger, it stuck with me for so long that the first time I went to New York for a gig, and it was second time because the first time I went I wasn't able to do this, but the second time I went we flew in super early. It was like a red eye, and the only thing that was open was the deli that they shot in where she does the famous orgasm scene.
Yeah. Is it the Cat's Deli?
I think it's yes, a Cantor's, Cants, something like that.
Me and Cool Greg accidentally went in there, and man, they are really rude when you don't know the procedure to order.
Yeah, you gotta fucking know. You gotta know. You gotta get in. It's a line thing. And you gotta go. You pay at the end. But man, oh man, when you are coming off a red eye and you are hungry, that place is unbelievably good. Yeah, it was really fun.
You get a giant thing of pastrami. It was bread and this much meat. It was so good. So
I got a big ass bagel. It was so good.
But yeah, that was fun. But while they in the movie, they watch Casablanca multiple times. So we went to go watch Casablanca on HBO Max. And while I was typing it in, it auto, for whatever reason, like Gone with the Wind just popped in as a recommendation. And yeah. Paul was like, let's watch that. And I was like, but it's 3 hours and 41 minutes.
Yeah, long and one. She's like, I watched it on TV, two parts over two nights when I was a kid. Yeah, I remember they were like, we're showing Gone with the Wind, but it's so long with the breaks.
Yeah.
But they had to do it over like two nights. That's... And I remember being like, well, how else am I going to see this film? Like a dumb fuck kid. I could have just rented it probably, but I'm going to do it.
It's certainly an endeavor. It's good. It reminds me so much of this old black and white movie that I watched a long time ago called The Good Earth.
Oh, yeah. Based on, that's a novel. It's I forget who wrote the novel, but yeah. They're both based on novels. Gone with the Wind, I think, was a novel as well.
We've been enjoying that, but it is like we're still going. We had to stop watching it because we had a couple of movies that I had to watch for this show and for in review. But we will get back to it eventually, probably tonight. Yeah.
It's interesting. I'm glad it's resonating with you, because sometimes those movies, when you watch earlier, especially early Hollywood movies like that, when was that movie made? I'm gonna say like
the 30s,
1934.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. That sounds right.
Really, it's so interesting to watch those, and obviously, there's some outdated.
1939.
There's some outdated concepts and some things that you have to just sort of just look beyond when coming to those movies. But seeing those and seeing the storytelling techniques back then, and some of them, it's so hard for me to watch because they don't age well, obviously. And with modern techniques, like, oh, this is boring. But when you go back and watch those works and they do work, it's such an interesting and fascinating experience.
It's kind of a bummer that they don't make epic movies like that anymore, where it's like this, you know, giant. The whole when you bought the cassette, the VHS, it would come in two cassettes.
Yeah.
I just feel like we don't get that anymore, you know?
Well, the last time we got that, I feel like, was like Titanic.
Yeah. That was the end.
Though I think they did sell Pearl Harbor like that too, but.
Oh, Christ. Who the hell needs 3 hours of that movie?
Pearl Harbor is one of those ones that, like, I know is bad, but there's something about the time that I watched it in my childhood that makes me love it.
So the other day,
Josh Hartnett, let's be real.
Josh Hartnett, God bless him. I just put 40 Days and 40 Nights on my Netflix queue, and Dee was like, take that off. We don't need to watch that movie. I was like, but I like Josh Hartnett and Shannon Sossaman. And she's like, take it off. I have never seen Pearl Harbor until like a month ago. It was on HBO, and I turned it on, and I watched 10 minutes of it, and I'm like, nope, I never need to watch this movie. I don't need to watch this at all. It's weird.
So you still but haven't like, seen Pearl Harbor?
Nope. It's Baby Ben. I've seen like maybe 30 minutes of the movie throughout the years. It just pops on. I watch it. I'm like, I don't need to watch this movie ever again. I don't need it. Another movie that I watched.
Can I sell you on it if I tell you that Baby Michael Shannon is in it?
Baby Michael Shannon is in Groundhog Day. Have you guys seen Groundhog Day?
Right.
Obviously,
that can't be. Not right. In a long time. Those are super far apart.
That was so long ago.
Right? Michael Shannon. We're talking Michael Shannon who was Zod in Superman, right?
Yeah.
Is it? He plays one of the teenagers who gets married in in Groundhog Day. It's the one where he's like, "Oh my god, you got us monster truck tickets." I was like, "What the fuck? Are you kidding me?"
That's like his second thing. His second.
Yeah, he must have been like 19 or 20 when he did it. It's pretty crazy. Dee and I went on a tear of Groundhog Day like movies, and by tear I mean we watched Palm Springs, and they were like, we should watch Groundhog Day. Man, it's fucking great. If you've never seen Groundhog Day, please watch Groundhog Day.
I don't know I've ever finished Groundhog Day. I know for a fact that I've seen a lot of it, but I don't know how it, like, I can't remember for the life of me right now how it ends. The last thing I remember is, like, when he goes on the, like, he kills himself a whole bunch of times. Maybe the train kills him.
So it goes through, it's actually kind of a very fascinating way they decided to structure it. So I was reading a bunch of the trivia about it, and Harold Ramis, when he was making it and when they were writing it, he was like, our kind of, I guess the approach to it was the five stages of grief. Mm-hmm. And so you see that where it's like denial, anger, negotiation. I forgot what the fourth one is. And then acceptance is the final one. And it actually plays out with that. So there's one point where he's just like, when he's trying to kill himself is obviously the midpoint. It's beautifully structured where he's like, he's trying to kill himself over and over again. And then of course he tries to negotiate his way out of it by saving the homeless person who keeps dying over and over again. And then eventually when he accepts it, he becomes a better person and lives that one perfect day, which is great. I don't want to spoil the ending for anyone like I just did, but it's it's very, very, really well-made movie. And it's one of those randomly, shockingly good, seems like just a normal humdrum Bill Murray movie. But when you go back and watch it, like, man, there's so much heart in this. It's so beautifully directed. Andy McDowell's great in it. Chris, what's his name? Shit. The guy from Cabin Boy. Chris Elliott's fucking great in it too. The whole cast is great. And that's where Ned Ryerson comes from too. Ned Ryerson? I recommend it. Anyway, We brought that up on Memento the other day because the actor, I forget the character actor's name, plays Ned Ryerson in that. He was in Memento as well.
He was also in Witches of Eastwick. He was the husband of the dude that, or of the girl that, like, is just being terrorized by these evil
people. No. So they look very similar. That's Robert Jenkins, who is he's the dad and stepdads. They are both bald and they're both characters.
And he's in Cabin in the Woods. He plays one of the little
backroom. Yep. And like I would have said that was still Ned. Yeah. Got it. Okay. All right. Yeah. One's a little bit thinner, right? One's a little bit thinner.
Yeah. Robert Jenkins is a skosh thinner. I think it's Richard Jenkins. Excuse me. Not Robert Jenkins. I think it's Richard Jenkins. He's also in a movie I just watched like a month ago, Fun with Dick and Jane, which is another surprisingly good, deep comedy that you would not think is, it just kind of came.
That's Will Arnett, right? Not the one with Adam Sandler playing his brother and sister.
No, Fun with Dick and Jane is with Taya Leone and Jim Carrey. Yeah, it's where they basically, he works for DinoClo or a giant corporation, and they make him the scapegoat, and then they go bankrupt and he can't afford anything anymore, so he starts they start basically Bonnie and Clyde robbing places. And it's hilarious.
Okay.
And it's really, really sad. And it's kind of like a low-key commentary on like corporate America and how it fucks over everyone. I digress. Joe, what you been on?
I haven't really watched a ton this week other than what we are supposed to watch for the show.
Okay. But
I did turn on Double Jeopardy with Ashley Judd.
Fuck yes, you did.
It's now, so good.
I want you to know something, Joe. Uh-huh. Here's a fun inside joke, and Danielle's going to kill me for saying this.
Uh-huh.
One of Danielle's favorite movies is a movie called The Bone Collector. And The Bone Collector does not star Ashley Judd. It stars Angelina Jolie and Denzel Washington. It's one of those cookie cutter, dumbass thriller movies that you just, it's Sunday, 3 o'clock, you throw it on, it's fun. But to make fun of her, I always bring up, I'll be like, oh, look, it's anytime an Ashley Judd suspense thriller comes on, I'll bring it up, be like, look, it's your favorite movie, Kiss the Girls or Double Jeopardy or any of these things. And she hates it so much. But Kevin, as you know, being married, sometimes you just need a win, you know? Sometimes you just got to prove to them that, you know, maybe they made a mistake and that they should move on. Double Jeopardy is great. That's the one where she gets tried for her husband's murder and then it turns out
he on a boat. And
she's like, well, you can't. Yeah,
she's in prison, and then she's like, "It's real good."
So then she becomes an actual murderer, right? Yep. Or tries to.
I can't remember how it ends, but
I don't remember how it ends.
I think it's worth. It's really. I mean, there's something about those like that late '90s like thriller movies that I really like. Between like this and Talented Mr. Ripley, and like all of those vibe movies. Like, I feel like that's a mood of movie that I'm in fairly often.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the one that I picked this time.
There you go. By the way, in the chat, people are correcting us left and right. A couple corrections. One is that the actor we're looking for, his name is Stephen Tobolowsky. That's the guy's name that played Ned Ryerson. I'm assuming we got the guy, the other guy wrong too.
Sounds like an opinion, you know what I mean?
No, I got it right. Richard Jenkins. That's good. Okay, I nailed that one. Hey, I'm one for two here on this one. Back to me. Another movie, obviously the movie that I watched last week and this week again is Psych 2, Last You Come Home. Me and Blessing are going to talk about that in a little bit. But man, the other night I was watching this. What did I watch? I watched a movie that was not good. And then I was like, I'll just keep going down this rabbit hole. And I watched Observe and Report on Netflix.
Oh. Joey's gone.
That's it. Yep. She's had enough.
Yep, that was it.
She has.
You watched enough. A movie that was not good.
No, I watched a movie. Oh, I watched Dinner for Schmucks.
Oh, right.
And
it was such a
fucked up, weird movie that I was like, I don't. I was in a very weird mood after that. There was now, granted,
so Dinner for cringy. Schmucks.
Very cringy.
But like, not worth watching, cringy, right?
No,
it's like really uncomfortable.
Yeah,
because it's one of those where. You know, Steve Carell and Paul Rudd, God bless him. I mean, it's got a great cast. It's just a lot. And it's one of those movies that you basically have a main character that you just make fun of the entire time, and it gets really malicious, and you just start thinking to yourself, man, am I to blame for this? Because I am supporting this movie by watching it. And then you go, no, I think the filmmakers are to blame for this one.
I feel like in small part you are.
There's moments of brilliance in this movie. I'm not going to say that there aren't moments where Steve Carell and Paul Rudd.
Yeah, they're great actors.
If they miss nine out of 10 times, that 10th time, they're going to fucking hit it. And there's great moments with Zach Galifianakis where he plays this another crazy character in this. But the basic concept of the movie is really fucked up, which is that, you know, in order to get a promotion at his work, Paul Rudd has to bring a idiot to a dinner party unbeknownst to the idiot, and they can all just all the corporate shill assholes are going to make fun of these people. And I just never like movies
it's
like
so
that
fucked up.
Yeah.
Like just the premise of it,
it's hard because the entire time, like I like, if it's going to be a lighthearted comedy, I don't mind the protagonist being flawed and I don't mind there being some character growth, but to even consider this and to even consider doing this, and they do a decent job of like showing that Paul Rudd really doesn't want to do this, but he feels compelled that he has to because he feels like he has to, you know, provide for this woman that he wants to marry, who he just has a lot of insecurities. I get that. But man, I'd be like, you can't do this. It's almost irredeemable, almost. But the cast of characters they bring in as the idiots are all genius comic actors. And so that part is decent. It's got decent moments in it, but I don't recommend watching it. Anyway, then I watched Observe and Report afterward because I was like, I'm in a crazy weird mood. Fuck me, don't watch that movie at midnight.
Have you seen it before? Was that your first time watching it?
I had seen it once before. I watched it when I was at my family's house.
And
it was one of those movies where I was like, oh, this is going to be like a Paul Blart Mall Cop style movie. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize the director of it was the director that did Eastbound and Down and like Foot Fist Way. And so the first time I watched it, I wasn't paying a lot of attention to it. It was like at a family thing. So I just kind of put it on and wasn't really paying attention. This time I was glued to my TV and I was like, holy shit, this movie is way too dark. Way too dark. It misses the mark completely from where they needed to be. It's just like 150% where it needed to be like 90% in times. So it's interesting. It's an interesting, very, 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 very dark comedy that I can't say that I recommend. Have you guys seen it?
Yeah, it's terrible. It's a terrible movie, Joey. Don't watch it.
Yeah, it's dark. It's like, it's one of those where it's like you're waiting for the levity, and when it comes, it's somehow more tragic. Like there's, I don't know, it's not worth talking about. But it's an interesting movie. It's interesting, but I think it's interesting in just how and how all the elements came together and missed the mark, in my opinion, as opposed to The Foot Fist Way, which is the first movie. If you haven't seen, it's with Danny McBride. It was one of his first movies, and I forget, Jody Hill, I think is the name of the director who made all these. And I'm a fan of Eastbound and Down, but there's something about writing those characters where it's like they're horribly broken and you can't tell if you're making fun of them or like feeling sorry for them the entire time. That is such a hard balance to strike that I think he has managed to do in a lot of the movies. Like he also did that HBO or the Showtime show Principals or Vice Principals with Danny McBride.
Was that
dude from like, so I never watched it, but that vibe of Eastbound and Down, where it's like, holy shit, this character is just deplorable, but for some reason, I'm kind of rooting for him because I know how fucked up he is and I want him to get better. But in Observe and Report, it just fucking goes off the rails fast. And you're like, holy shit, I can't believe they made this movie. Anyway.
Wait, real quick, to backtrack just a tiny bit and then jump off on something else. The Dinner for Scoundrels.
Schmucks.
Reminded me of a movie called Would You Rather. Have either of you guys seen that?
Does it have Brittany Snow in it?
It does. And it has Sasha Grey in it as well.
It's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, it's really fucked up. Did you like it? Because I can't remember if I enjoyed it or hated it. I remember the ending pisses me off.
Would You Rather didn't make me feel as uncomfortable as Dinner for Schmucks did. Mm-hmm. Dinner for Schmucks is like sitting through the Scott's Tots episode of
The
Office just like, for like 2 hours.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I've seen Dinner for whatever.
Schmucks.
I think I remember kind of liking Would You Rather, just like the idea of it.
I just remember like, man, Sasha Grey, not a great actor.
It is.
Also, that like the first moment where they're like everything becomes real and like the people realize they're not messing around was really good. Well done. Anyway, sorry for that deviation.
Yeah.
And Brittany Snow will forever be awesome to me because of Pitch Perfect. Endgame.
She just got married.
Did she?
Mm-hmm.
Who?
Somebody I don't know.
Okay. Fair. Cool. Any other things that you guys have been watching before we move to the required watching for this week on the Nick List?
I think that's it for me.
Coolio. Oh, last week, ladies and gentlemen, due to some of your suggestions and some of our suggestions and just shit that I watched that I wanted you guys to watch just to see your opinion on, we decided on three movies. We nixed The Running Man last minute in lieu of Whiplash, which is available on Vudu. The Witches of Eastwick was number 2 on HBO Max. And I want to kick it off with a movie we were supposed to watch the week prior, but we didn't get around to, which is Just Mercy, which we finally watched. And I realized one of the reasons why subconsciously I have been like avoiding this movie was because I knew it was going to be intense. And man, it was in the best possible way. I think this movie was great. I think it was phenomenal.
The movie is so good. The acting is so good. And it's just so painful. Like the whole time.
Dude, the fact that it's based on a true story obviously makes it that much more impactful. But they just did a great job with this. And it's just an incredibly, incredibly compelling and heartbreaking story. And the fact that this human being exists in real life and is actually out there doing this work actually gives me hope for humanity. You know, like I can't wait from this being like, oh, there are good people in the world who are willing to sacrifice to do good by others and right injustices. And that is so incredibly important and special. And I just was blown away by this. I thought everyone did a great job.
Man, everything that I see O'Shea Jackson Jr. in, I feel like I get even more impressed by his acting range. And this, every time I see him in anything, I'm just like, man, I want you to be in everything.
I'm really happy they showed us the moment of like him like getting out of jail right at the end.
Yeah,
and it's totally. Just like, oh, thank God.
That was. I mean, that's always so wonderfully impactful, right? When they cut, because you were wondering, like, is he gonna? What happened to him?
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, you actually see after what was like 30 years or something like that.
Something. Yeah.
He walks out, and it's just such a beautiful moment. And they also have the moment as well. A few other of those moments that are real life they show at the end too, which is really, really great. I thought everyone did a great job. I mean, I'm always blown away by Jamie Foxx in particular and how he just disappeared his characters. Michael B. Jordan, of course, is phenomenal, but you just expect that. I mean, obviously you expect it out of Jamie Foxx too, but Jamie Foxx is such a fascinating human being for me because he started as a stand-up and he started on shows like In Living Color and he started as more of a comedic actor and then has just blows me away every time I see him in a dramatic role like this. Because he's so freaking good. Specifically, the scenes that really strike me are the ones with the three death row inmates. Mm. And that moment in the middle of it where you actually have to sit through the execution is, I mean, we're in spoiler territory. Sorry, everyone. But it's fucking really powerful and really, really sticks with you. And it's one of those things where I've never been a big advocate of the death penalty at all. And now this is just strengthening that resolve. Where I was like, this is just clearly unbelievably inhumane and no one should ever have to go through this. Like it's another one of my just if I could wave a magic wand, I would absolutely take that off the table no matter what.
I think, isn't it for now at least off the table because it's being looked at? Well, I mean, I don't know.
I think it's actually at the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
From what I
said. But like while it's being decided on, it's they're not happening.
You're not like it. Yeah, that's great.
And that's been going on, I think, for
somebody just was executed in like Texas or something, but maybe I'm.
Well, I know it's state by state. Obviously, I don't think we have the death penalty in California, right?
I mean, I think we do, but it's one of those things that it's currently we have the lethal injection, or we had the lethal injection, but it's now paused because they're trying to figure out if it's humane or not. Spoilers, it's not.
Yeah, it's fucking
further executions are halted as of March 2019.
I did not know that. Jesus Christ. States with the death penalty, there are 28, including Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, and a few more. Well, yeah, they got to take that off the table. It's ridiculous, in my opinion. But I don't want to talk about it.
Especially when like this movie ends, it's like, oh, hey, like it's been proven, or at least like what was the stat was like one out of nine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go like it may not be guilty or something. Like there's more evidence. Yeah. And it's like, oh, that's
yeah, the scene that's really, really fascinating to me is the one where he sits down for the first time with the inmates, and he just goes through that quick succession of five people of just all different, you know, all different ethnicities. And every single one of them is like, yeah, here's how it went down for me. I got a shitty public defender who didn't care and just told me to take whatever plea because I probably wouldn't get the death penalty. And then they gave the death penalty, and then that guy's nowhere to be found. And it's like, fuck me, that's a horrible situation to be in. I didn't even realize, but also the fact that they can put people on death row before they're even convicted just to intimidate them and being like, this is where you're going to be. Is yeah. fucking atrocious. That's yeah. just terrible.
What was the name of the guy that was
Buster Scruggs?
Is that who it is?
The guy that played Buster Scruggs in The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Are you talking about the guy with the burned face?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I forget that actually. I always want to say Ben Mendelsohn, but it's not Ben Mendelsohn.
No.
I forget his name.
Hold on, I'm trying to look it up, but he was so good, and the whole like them using the fact that his like burn. Like his fear of being burned and like the putting him in death row and being like, I could smell the burned. That was also really powerful. And the way that he was manipulated to basically, you know, put an innocent man in jail. God.
Yeah, straight up. His name is Tim Blake Nelson.
Yeah,
that's the name of the actor.
He was very good. A lot of really good acting in this movie. Highly recommend
it. Super heavy, but very good.
So I guess that that answers that, right? Good, good.
Good.
Oh, yeah, 100% good, good.
All righty. Gonna just enter that in the doc. What's the next we're talking about? Are we ready to talk about Witches of Eastwick?
Let's talk about Whiplash first, and then we'll talk about Witches of Eastwick.
Joey, did you watch this movie?
Which one? I watched all of
Whiplash.
Them.
Whiplash.
What'd you guys think of Whiplash?
I loved Whiplash. It was, but it was also hard to watch in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. J.K. Simmons, man. Very intense.
I went
scary.
From not my tempo. What?
Not my tempo.
Oh
not
yeah.
Quite, that scene yeah. is so
tempo.
Hard.
Not my tempo. I went from loving the movie to hating it back to loving it again. The emotional roller coaster this goddamn movie took me on, I was not prepared for. I did not know it was going to be this serious. And within like the first 10 minutes, it's like, hey, he's slapping people that like aren't on tempo, like you get
straight
you better
throwing
get on
chairs.
Tempo. It's like, oh my god, why did I throw that chair at you? It's like, I don't know.
It's interesting because, like, I mean, I'm not saying this like it was as intense, but I had a very cantankerous relationship with my band director all throughout high school because I was an asshole and so was he, and so we clashed a lot. And I remember distinctively, like, I had weird feelings of being back in those situations where I feel like, you know, someone was being unfairly, like pretty much inappropriately criticizing me. And I was like, I don't know if this is me growing up and this is how adults talk to each other, or if I just need to walk out. But there were like times where I walked out of class. I was like, you're just being an asshole. And that reminded me of this to like on steroids.
Yeah.
Where it was to the point where I physically felt like if someone treated me like that, I'd be like, this is it. I'm going to jail. Like, this person's going to get put through the fucking wall. Mm-hmm. Like, it just wouldn't happen. Of course, thankfully channels that into his music, which is a much more positive way to do it, but it's a hard story to watch for sure.
When what's his name? Miles Teller? Is that the actor's name? Mm-hmm. When he's correct. In the car crash and then crawls out and then it's like, fuck it, I'm going still. And it's just like, oh my God, you don't have time for this. And he starts playing and you're like, I guess he's going to pull it off. And then he fucks up.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh my God, that's it. Everything is gone. And then sure enough, the next scene, he's like getting kicked out of the school. Oh, well, I guess he gets in a fight with the guy, which is great. But yeah, then it goes so down. Like, it goes from such a like cool place of like, oh, this guy, look, he's like pushing himself to the limit to like, oh, he's done. He's done. There's no coming back from this. And then they have that weird moment in the bar where he's like, oh, you know, my drummer won't cut it. Like, can you come do this? And it's like, well, that's a weird twist for it to take. And to have the reveal of him being like, I know it was fucking you. And it's a different song that he has no idea. And it just fucks him. And then it, like, there's another moment of like twist where he walks out and he's about to leave. And his dad's like, wait, what are you doing? And he turns around and he fucking kills it. Oh, my God. This movie is
and
a roller coaster.
He calls the shots and like everything. Yeah.
But it's interesting because it the theme of the movie, or at least one of the concepts that they're playing with, is like when you have someone, like, you have to be pushed to greatness, and sometimes that push needs to come from a dark place, and you can use that to achieve greatness. And they have that moment of recognition at the end where like that sort of fucked up mentorship works, where he's like, wow, because I was abusive to you and because I was so hard on you, you have now been elevated to that great status. But I don't know that I agree with that at all. I don't think that needs to necessarily be the way. And it's such a weird resolution at the end where he kind of like doesn't necessarily forgive him, but he's like, I see where you were at. And you see that acknowledgement in J.K. Simmons too, where he's like, haha, the process worked. And I was like, man, this process is really fucked up. And it's not to him, it's acceptable to sacrifice 9 out of 10 people, as long as that tenth person hits that top level of performance, and it could be attributed to J.K. Simmons, like that character's like tutelage. But it's just fucked up, man.
I was just gonna say, what I thought was crazy was that I very much felt like the message of the movie, the theme was sometimes going all in and giving everything up isn't worth it, like. You know, we get to the 85% mark, and that's kind of where the conclusion seems to be leading. And it's like, all this kid wants is to be one of the best jazz drummers of all time. All this teacher wants is to create one of the best jazz drummers. And they take us 95% of the movie where it's like, oh no, now like they both have lost everything and there's nothing left. And then suddenly everything is possible, and like they just do it, and this kid takes control and becomes this like god level drummer, and it's just such a cool moment, you know?
I think it's a very powerful film. Obviously, it's Damien Chazelle who would then go on the next year. I think they got nominated and won for this Academy Awards, and they got nominated again for his next film, which was La La Land. And then I think got nominated again for First Man, which was the Ryan Gosling space movie. I don't think they won for that, though.
I should watch that, though.
Just every 2 years, Whiplash 2014, La La Land 2016, First Man 2018.
Boom. Yeah, so basically he had back-to-back-to-back films. Where he had three films in a row that got nominated, which is ridiculous. But really, you know, he's a phenomenal filmmaker. What are you going to do? And picks great people to work with. Which is Ryan Gosling.
Has anyone seen Last Man or First Man?
First Man? Yeah, it's great.
I have not.
Okay.
It's great. Like, it won for, I think it won for best editing or best cinematography, and it should have if it didn't, because the movie is put together in a way where it feels like you're watching home movie footage from that era. But and when I say that, it sounds horrible, but it's not.
It's like 16 millimeter, like.
Yeah, but it feels like you're stepping back into nostalgia and like this sort of fever dream of a moment, and then it's punctuated with very harsh realities of sort of who he was and how his family reacted to what he was trying to do. But it's a beautiful movie. I thought it was great. It's very much experiential, though, where it's not obviously much on plot, because it's just kind of a retelling of the events through a through a sort of romanticized, or not romanticized, but stylized eye. It's very, I was blown away by it. I loved it. I thought the cinematography was fucking phenomenal.
I might check that out. I'm going to put that on
my list. Lastly, we have The Witches of Eastwick. Now, had either of you guys seen this movie prior to this, to going into this?
No,
I have. I watched it when I was a little kid. Very young.
Joey, let's start with you. What was your read on The Witches of Eastwick?
I definitely thought it was going to be like campier and a little bit more fun.
Archon.
And it ends up being like way more serious than I was expecting.
Yeah.
And maybe serious isn't even the word. It's just not as funny as I was expecting. I was expecting them to have way more fun with it, but I'm like, oh no, they're just like all weirdly in love with Jack Nicholson.
I wouldn't
say I don't really buy.
Yeah, this is the thing. So I don't think they're in love with him. I think they're, to me, the movie is a low key sort of commentary on abusive relationships. And that's kind of why I like it, because I think at the end, the message, while mixed and left open for interpretation, ends up being that, because they have that moment at the beginning of it where they talk about, you know, jokingly around, right, why they need a man or their ideal man or whatever. And then, of course, because of the power, they manifest that. I don't know if you got that or not from the first watch, but they literally talk about him, and then he rolls into town and doesn't have a name until they give him a name. And so their power manifests this horrible force in their life. And then, of course, by banding together and realizing they don't need it, they're able to overcome it, only to be, of course, encountering it again at the end with their now male children. But I think, to me, the message is that, you know, good mothers, you know, good families can raise good men if possible, but there's always that opportunity for that bad influence to sneak back in. I just think that the movie, to me, when I watched it when I was younger, is exactly why I wanted you guys to watch it, where on the outset you're like, this is going to be like Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
It is much deeper and much more fucked up than that at all. I mean, the scene that traumatized me is the one with the cherry pits.
Yeah, where it's fucked up.
Really fucked up. And to her credit, oh, God damn it, I had her name in my I'm going to forget the actress's name, but the actress that plays her, she was also an Alien.
Is great. Yeah. She's really good.
I think she steals the show in this, because she has
her
coming unhinged is just fucking crazily. It's beautifully done. And of course, Richard Jenkins subsequently, like his response to her, how it's crazy. It's just how everyone responds to this bad thing that's in this town, and they can't put their finger on why. To me, Veronica Cartwright. To me, that's why the movie is so powerful. And I think I read one review of it that stated, you know, obviously, like, this movie could be viewed as from a lot of different ways, and I think it's open to interpretation as well. But I think it could be viewed as a fairly strong feminist film, in that they were saying, like, oh, well, you know, these women don't realize that this is happening, and they let this guy into their life. And I'm like, but the reviewer was basically like, isn't that how it happens? Like, sometimes you don't realize it until it's too late, and it's very, very difficult to get out of those things. And I think, to me, that was why the movie worked. And I also think that it's just some of the performances that Cher specifically turns in, are great. So that monologue she has, which by the way is a classic monologue, where he's trying to get her to have sex with him and just using the worst, you know, worst charm possible. Which, by the way, it's like some of the stuff doesn't work for me, like Jack Nicholson being sexy and like saying some of the stuff.
It hasn't aged well.
It does not age well.
But
I think her monologue in that moment is just so classic Cher, where she's like, "No, you're fucking gross. You're dumb. You're the least attractive person I've ever seen, and you smell." You know, and it just paints this horrible picture of him. Then, of course, he's able to creep back in by playing on her insecurities. I think the movie's a lot deeper than I gave it credit for could understand when I was a child. And obviously, there's a lot of stuff that does not age well in it. And that's unfortunate. But I think overall, I think it's shot beautifully. I think the music's gorgeous. I think the lead actresses in it do a great job of having that character transformation and then having the realization that they need to break from this power, this thing that's basically a cancer in their lives. Sorry. What else do you guys think about the movie?
I didn't really like it. I remember watching it and like being really confused when I was a little kid, and then watching it now, like, I understand what you're saying about a lot of those abusive relationship, it could be portraying that, but I kind of feel like I disagree, and it's because, like, at the end they don't stop dating him because they're like, oh, this is bad for us. They stop dating him because they're like, oh, like, the city is talking shit about us, right?
No, they stop dating him because he's basically pushed them into a place where they're doing very dark things, and they realize that they have to break it up with him.
But I mean, is that the case, or wasn't that like
because
they killed that woman?
She dies.
Yeah.
They helped. Basically, they're culpable in that. That because of their relationship, because they let it go that far, it has manifested itself in an actual physical attack on someone who has died, and they realize they can't do that. They don't have control of this thing anymore. So, and the person this person is causing all that, or is at least pushing them together to do this stuff.
Yeah, but I also was like confused on like why was this woman so sensitive to the fact that he was evil, right? Because
she's super God-fearing. I mean, a lot of the stuff. I'm not going to argue. This is just my interpretation of it, watching it in my life.
I just found it still really confusing and kind of like I know that like the style of that movie and like the archetype that Jack Nicholson plays isn't like it's not really a thing anymore. I can't like watching with Paula, she was like, well, why do people think he's good looking? I was like, I don't know, they just always have. You know,
I think and that's the thing, is like maybe I'm explaining some of this away. Back in the day, I do remember thinking like, oh, this is what a sexy guy is supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I look at it more of like he's
the trope of a sexy guy.
Yeah, he is all of these. He's all of these things that on paper should add up to being a sexy guy, but in reality is just not, doesn't work, is corrupt, is fucked up, is just basically like a little boy running around wanting a mother, basically out of a significant other. And so to that degree, I think Nicholson plays it perfectly. I just don't know if I'm bringing in my 40-year-old 2020 sensibility to it, or if that's what the original filmmakers had intended. And I think they didn't intend that. I think they intended for Jack Nicholson to be sexy.
I think so too. And like, that's the thing. So much of it feels like, oh, you guys, like this just didn't age well. And I think that we're trying to fit.
You might be trying to explain it. Yeah.
Explain it away.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's my problems. And it's just, I thought I would get more out of it. Cause I, like, when I, the first time I watched it, way too young. And now, maybe it wasn't me. Maybe I wasn't too young.
No, maybe. I mean, I'm
not. But I also think that Jack Nicholson not being this, like, particularly hot, attractive guy kind of plays into it, too, in the sense of, like, a lot of, like, really manipulative people can, like, coerce these relationships that, like, don't really make sense. But they're feeding on like very specific insecurities of people make it work, even though it doesn't look or feel right.
I mean, there's literally the scenes where he's, I forget the term for it, but whatchamacallit, where you're kind of teeing them up, where he's kind of setting them up.
Nagging them?
No, not negging.
Well, there's definitely scenes where he's nagging them.
There is negging for sure. I think grooming was the word I was looking for, where you see him sort of figuring out what they are and kind of he just has this inherent knowledge because, I mean, literally, he's the devil.
Yeah.
So he's a demon of some sort of negative force. So he has this knowledge of how to, you know, ingratiate himself to these women and realizes that they have a power in them that he can corrupt, which is interesting. And of course, I love those moments where they're like, I can't remember his name until the three women give him the name, and then he has a name, and it's like, I just thought there's a lot.
And the necklace breaks,
then she falls down and starts. That's her ruination. Where once they give him a name and they realize that this evil force is there, the one virtuous or overly virtuous person, I should say, because that's another commentary in the film as well, which is that these people have this sort of like unrealistic standard at which to hold people. The townspeople do, and then once someone breaks with that, they immediately criticize them, and you know, there's that side of it too, which I always found was fucked up and fascinating. Which is that, like, the second Susan Sarandon shows her sexuality, then all of the other people in the town start like basically tearing her apart, being like, "How dare you like be this morally corrupt, bankrupt person just because you're in touch with this part of yourself that you didn't used to be?"
But wasn't that also like playing into the fact that the magazine had like. Not the magazine, but the local newspaper had put essentially a campaign against him and these three women, right?
Yeah, it was done by the woman, by Veronica Cartwright's character. She forced her husband
to do that.
Because she was the head of all of the women in the church that were basically like the pure ones, or like the moral standpoint or the moral authority. And she was just like, it's a commentary on that too, of being like, what the fuck? Like, just because people are changing and because they're not adhering to your strict moral guideline, you have to tear them down. Which I thought was a fascinating thing. I mean, the movie's dark. It's very dark.
It is.
And you know, it's hard to argue that it works 100%. I thought it'd be interesting for you guys to watch it, because you go in thinking it's going to be like this lighthearted fare, and it's then you get people choke, like spitting out and dying from eating cherry pits and
they don't,
snakes beds and horrible
they
shit.
They don't die from the cherry pits. She gets murdered by her husband.
She gets murdered by her husband,
which is kind of a really sad thing. But
it's really sad.
Yeah. It was interesting also to see the actor that played Lurch as Fidel.
Yeah, as the Fidel.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, where do we want to rank this bad boy? Sounds like you guys just did not like it at all.
No,
not
honestly,
at all.
The more that I talk about it, the more I kind of like it.
Okay.
It's, I don't know that I actually I don't know.
I would
like a
squarely
thought provoker, which I appreciate.
I would squarely put this at bad. I feel like the message is muddy at best, and overall there's a lot of things that happen where it's just like I wish you had gone a little bit more explanation here.
Yeah. Yeah, my thing is I don't know if I'm defending this movie out of nostalgia or out of the fact that I want it to be something that it's not. Mm. So I'm going to leave it to you guys to score this one. I think I'm going to abstain
from voting. I don't know that it's bad.
Mm. I mean,
I think it might be good bad.
I could say some of the acting is very good. I mean, Jack Nicholson is a phenomenal actor, even though this role that he plays is grimy and very gross a lot of the time. And then the three girls are so good.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I think from a technical standpoint, I love the way the film looks.
Sure.
I love how it's directed. Yeah. I love the acting choices in it. I love the music choices in it. It's just, I think the movie is at odds with itself. And I think it doesn't age well because there's a lot of scenes in this that were acceptable in the 80s that you would just, there's just no fucking way a filmmaker would have a male lead talk to female leads like he does in this, even if he is the literal devil, and rightfully so. So it's hard for me to look back and be like, how do we score this one? Because I enjoyed watching it again from just an analytical standpoint, but I don't know that I necessarily want to recommend this for other people to watch unless they're willing to kind of pick it apart like we have.
Yeah, How about bad? Yeah, I'm saying bad.
Okay. Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like strongly on. Kevin has like a strong opinion on it, and I don't. So I'm fine with putting it in bad. Because I guess liking talking about a movie doesn't mean that the movie's necessarily good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think exactly that's a perfect way to put it. Why this is one of those where you watch and you're like, wow, there's a lot decompressed here. But at the end of the day, do we think it's a good movie? No. Do I like watching it because it's nostalgic and fascinating, kind of a time capsule for people's opinions and how things were made? Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think it's not necessarily something I'd be like, you guys have to watch this. And I might have been overly positive about it last week, but after having a little time to think about it I think it resonates a little bit with me on a negative tone. So there we go.
Real quick, which is really interesting because right now, like, we're still maybe a little bit more halfway done. Sorry. With Gone with the Wind, which is in a similar way, like the message is cloudy, but the movie itself is well made and like very clear, and it's like you're following this journey that like you can see the way the character is evolving and changing and what she's doing, and all of it kind of progresses in a way that makes like ignoring the fact that like, oh, all these people in the way we see them now are kind of like bad people, and like the majestic South is not that majestic, you know?
I mean, it's interesting you watching this movie against the backdrop of them like tearing down Confederate flags across America and having for the first time in probably our country's history, a real conversation about what that imagery means and why it was put up in the first place.
Right.
It's fascinating. It's odd. And that's a bigger conversation for a different day, obviously. Like, how do you judge an older movie? Mm-hmm. Because there are scenes in Witches of Eastwick that I'm just like, wow, these are, when I was a kid, maybe I was like, oh, this is fucking hilarious that he's talking to her like that. But now as an adult, I'd be like, if I heard someone speak to another person like that, I would be like, that would infuriate me. But I don't know. You know, it's that concept of the new term outdated attitudes, where that's what they're saying of like, that's how they're labeling films now, being like, this is a movie. It was good for its time, but it has some shit in it that just doesn't work anymore.
It's interesting. Standards. Gone with the Wind started with about maybe like a 10 or 12 minute video of, I'm not sure who the person was, but someone breaking it down, being like, hey, just so you know, like this movie came out in 1931, was like kind of like a history lesson of the movie and of the era that it came out and what it meant through time. And that like a lot of messages will be lost, like you know, are going to be a little different when you watch it now. And right. when we were watching Witches of Eastwick, Paula was like, I wish that we hadn't gotten a little explanation like that. Because she was like, I don't know, is Jack Nicholson supposed to be hot? And I was like, I think that for the time, like, he was one of those guys that, like, people thought were really hot, right? I mean, he's been in movies.
No, he was
in, like, Chinatown, like, a long. Yeah, but he was been an actor for a while.
Yeah, but he was always, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was, like, my young, you know, I was, like, 10 years old by the time the 80s came out. But he was always known more for his acting chops than he was for his look.
But he was also, like, wasn't he always in, like, sexually provocative movies? There's the other movie, the Doorman Always Rings. No, what's it called?
The Postman Always Rings Twice. No, I don't remember him being in that. He was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which was a movie about him being in an insane asylum. Right. He won an Academy Award for that. He was nominated for Chinatown. Chinatown was a noir film that had to do with a lot of taboo subjects, not the least of which was incest. But he always picked just projects that were just really, really fascinating movies from, like, writing a thematic standpoint. He was never in, like, blockbuster big movies until, like, later he started doing some fluff shit. And then, of course, did, like, As Good As It Gets and things like that in his later years.
As Good As It Gets is phenomenal. All right? So slow down.
Slow down. Acting. Yeah, I don't remember him. Jack Nicholson was never a sex symbol. So,
are you sure? Yeah.
I don't remember him ever being touted as that, because
he is the guy in The Postman Always Knocks, or The Postman Always Rings Twice. But I don't have, like, I don't know why I brought that movie up. No, it's a steamy affair. Okay, all right, yeah, it's.
Oh yeah, no, that's about someone like creeping in, better creep. All right, we're going long on this, and I do want to touch base with Blessing on Psych. What do we want to pick for next week? We have a couple suggestions over on Patreon. Someone suggests, Jeff the Maverick says, so a suggestion for the Nicholas that I would like you guys to really think you guys would enjoy is Big Time Adolescence. It's on Hulu and has Pete Davidson. Also, if you guys need a show to watch, Outer Banks is a cool show. It just got renewed for season 2, and it is about a group of outcast kids going after a ship that shipwrecked with 400 million worth of gold on it. It's pretty tense. I couldn't stop watching it. Super hyped for season 2.
Oh, interesting.
Let's see. Vinny Vincent says, since Whiplash went on the Nicholas this week, let's put on Damien Chazelle's other big one, La La Land. What say you on that?
I don't know. I can't watch that movie. We know that's going to land in good. We all love that movie. I'd want to watch First Man before watching that again.
Well, First Man, I mean, you should watch First Man. Let's keep going with these suggestions, then we can pick a couple movies for next week. Let's see. Recommendation from Christopher says Kung Fu Hustle. This one's come up before, but he says a hilarious and fun kung fu movie with great fight scenes and a fun story. Kung Fu Hustle. That was it for the suggestions. Brand just said, hey, what's up, everyone? Are you guys paying attention to the Comic-Con news? What are your thoughts on Comic-Con at-home panels? I don't have any thoughts on them other than, like,
it doesn't, man, feel as big.
If I can't smell it, it ain't Comic-Con. You know what I mean? I can't smell the cosplay.
Yeah.
Let's see. By that,
something I mean, that I've seen.
Just to alleviate anyone's thoughts on what that might be referring to. What do you guys think? What do you want to watch next week? We don't have to pick three, by the way. We could just do two or one.
Well,
have you guys heard about The Rental?
The Rental.
Is that a horror movie?
Well, there's two of them. So The Rental is horror with Allison Brie and Dave Franco. The Kevin Bacon one is the other one that I actually think it might actually be better. And worth watching.
Joey, if it's got bacon in it, it's better.
It's Kevin Bacon and it's Amanda Seyfried.
You should have left. Is that what it was? Yeah. I'm down to watch that one.
I'm sorry. What are you guys saying? Which one here?
It's Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. You called You Should Have Left, and it's Kevin Bacon, Amanda Seyfried, horror-ish.
Yeah, I got that spoiled for me.
Don't spoil it for me.
Well, I'm not spoiling it for you, but I don't know if you're going to like it.
Well, let's put it on if possible. We also have The Running Man from last week that we could put on, which I'd love to see what your guys' reaction
is. Did we not have Old Guard?
Yeah, but we nixed that because it looks terrible.
Did we nix it? Because I just have
bumped it for sure.
Okay.
All right, we can do Old Guard.
Nah, I'm down to watch Old Guard.
All right, let's watch Old Guard.
Watch Old Guard, great.
I'm also down to watch You Never Should Have Left. Why don't we leave it at that?
Let me see where... Is it You Should Never? No, You Should Have Left? You Should Have Left. Okay.
So you should have left.
Which, by the way, four words in a title, too many. You know what I mean? I know. Let's keep it at two, maybe three.
I mean, if I was making this movie, I'd call it Just Leave.
Just Leave. Okay. Looks like we're going to have to rent this one or buy it.
That's okay.
Okay.
All right. Next week's Nick List are two movies we're going to do, You Should Have Left and Old Guard. And if you want to watch extra credit, The Running Man, it's a great movie. If you guys have suggestions for future Nick List movies, go over to patreon.com/kindoffunny, back us at the $5 or above tier, and you guys can suggest fun movies that you love or would love for us to tear apart or analyze, as we have The Witches of Eastwick. That was a fascinating one. Thanks for sitting through that film, guys. Wanted to see what your thoughts were on it. Next up, I know the show's going a little long, but we're calling in a specialist on this one. Blessing Adeoye Jr. has unfortunately told me that he loves Psych. And so now he is my Psych buddy. And we are going to you guys can hang out if you want. But Joe, if you want to take off, or Kev, if you want to take off and don't want to be a part of this, please don't feel free to. If we can call in Blessing right now so we can talk about what I would say is the biggest release of the year, Psych 2.
Joey, are you staying?
I was going to bounce. But
You should bounce.
Okay.
Bounce. While we do that, this is gonna be, well, I can't take a break. Let's get Blessing in first. You guys can talk a little bit because I have to.
Joey,
go to
the bathroom. Need to bounce. Bounce, Joey. Bounce.
There he goes. Oh, I was gonna say Joe, stick around, but that's okay. You've watched the first three seasons of Psych, Kevin?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it. I think it's funny. I think it's well done. There he is. There he is. I can actually dip out too. I mean, I'll stay. But I'm gonna change.
You guys talk, catch up on whatever happened, because I have to run to the restroom real quick. Awesome. Sorry, I apologize.
Let me tell you. I was listening to the show and I got so into it that I forgot that I was all in the show. I was legit like, when you guys mentioned that I was coming up, I was like, I am. Oh shoot, yeah. There's a reason I'm listening to this.
Hold tight. I'll be right back, guys. Or talk amongst yourself. Blessing, what movies have you been watching? Tell Kevin.
It's funny enough you guys bring up Old Guard, because I recently watched The Old Guard, and
there's no though, right? It's just Old Guard.
I think it's The Old Guard.
I don't think so. Well,
is it not?
My camera's went.
Oh no, I'm looking it up. Old Guard. No, it's The Old Guard. Old Guard.
My apologies. I didn't mean to call you out in front of all the kids.
Yeah, I mean, when it's a The, you never know if the The is there or not. Yeah. You know, sometimes I just call it Legend of Zelda. It's interesting you guys had the back and forth of like this kind of trap, or this looks like it's gonna be bad. The reason why I watched it was because one of my friends was like, this is legit my movie of the year. Like, this is the best
Greg
movie
Miller?
I've seen this
was
year.
Your friend Greg
no,
Miller?
It wasn't Greg Miller. It was my friend Rihanna from What's Good Games.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, she was encouraging me in our group chat to go check out The Old Guard. And I watched it. And let me tell you, I thought it was terrible.
Yeah.
I did not like it.
All right. I'm excited to talk to someone about it, because I also was like, this is very, at the most, okay.
Yes. Like, it was one of those ones, too, where I went into it. Kevin, you said you watched it?
Yeah.
So I went into it, and I had no idea what it was. Sure. I didn't know, like, what the plot was or any of the things. And so starting it, I was like, oh, this is Sicario. This is like Sicario, where it's going to be like this, like, drug cartel, team of law enforcers doing whatever, right? Like, getting into action. And then very quickly, I was like, oh, it is not that. It is something completely different and something that seems to be pretty cool. And they like, it introduces so many questions of, like, oh, what's going on? Who are these people? What are their paths? Like, paths? What's their backstory or whatever? And I feel like I got maybe half of the answers, and just so much stuff just wasn't answered.
Yep.
And I was like, why are you not answering all these other questions 100%. I have about who these people are and what they can do and, like, all this stuff? And so that's what was disappointing about it, though I did like some of the action. Like, yeah, it had some things going for it.
See, I didn't like the action. I thought a lot of the action was like, oh, look at the shaky cam, so you can't really see, like, we don't have to choreograph it that well. Like, there were some cool aspects to it, like the fight scene in the cathedral I thought was really cool, because, like, that's obviously what's her face just being awesome, taking everyone down. But we'll talk about it more or less next week. Let me switch you over to Nick.
Ladies and gentlemen,
that was really cool. Yeah,
that was great. Blessed. So obviously, we're going to talk about what I would think is probably the most important release of this entire year. I know there's been a lot of really big games, really big movies that have stalled out, this and that, but for some reason, the clouds have parted, and God Himself has given us a little gift that is Psych 2, Lassie Come Home. What are your thoughts? What do you think of this? I'll say movie. We'll just say a movie.
Oh yeah, it's an hour and a half long thing. They introduce it as a movie pretty much, even though it is just a longer Psych episode. I happen to have been watching Psych this last week, just because, you know, I wanted to go through the Yang trilogy, and I watched the first two Yang episodes. Still need to finish it off. I love Psych in general. I think the show is fantastic. I love it for how goofy it is. I love it for how much they just they throw all seriousness out the window, and it is just joke after joke after joke after joke. And Psych 2, the movie, I think delivers on exactly what Psych is and what makes Psych so lovable. Like, there's so much humor. There are so many jokes that just come out of nowhere. There is a main plot, obviously, but it feels like they don't take it seriously at all. And that is all I want from Psych.
Yep. Yeah. To me, obviously, if you're a fan of Psych at all, it's not going to come as any surprise that the movies basically just feel like 3-part episodes kind of smacked together. And what's always hilarious to me is that they always get to the end, the resolution, where they're supposed to be the standoff, right? Every episode, movie, it always ends with the standoff, where it's Juliet and Lasseter usually pointing guns at whatever bad guy is. Sean and Gus are in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But it always feels like, we have to do this. It always feels like we have to do this, because the fun of the show and for these movies is always getting to that point. And so the resolution is always like, whatever. But like the actual fun of, you know, in this one, the thing that got me, I watched it twice now, the thing that gets me every single time is when they go back to the psych office and it's a cat cafe.
What a great joke too. Like, especially when they first go to it, and like, again, to the point of the show making jokes over and over and over again, right? Or like just rapid fire jokes.
Yeah.
They get to a point where they're in the cat cafe and they're talking to like the lady there. And like the whole bit was, she looks very young, and like, she's like, how old do you think I am? And I think Sean is like 40 and Gus is like nine. Sean is like, oh yeah, I was thinking like the girl from the Orphan, the movie or whatever.
Right.
And like, you know, you had that bit. You have the other joke from that, which I liked, was toward the end of that conversation, she was like, oh yeah, we're opening in like 9 minutes. And I think Gus was like, oh wait, so this isn't a cafe for cats or whatever.
He's like, you seem like you're doing really good business here. She goes, we don't open for 9 minutes. It's like, it's not a cafe for cats.
Yeah, which like, it's so good.
Such
man.
A dumb, obvious joke. But that is, in doing that, it's almost like what I love about Psych, and obviously it's kind of one of those like guilty pleasure shows, right? Or maybe that's a bad way of putting it. It's a show that you watch when you want to just relax and have fun and forget about the world. And I have watched through all 8 seasons of the show in some way, shape, or form probably 3 times now. I don't remember a lot of it. So if you're going to quiz me on individual episodes, forget about it, man, because that's not what this show is about. The show is about watching these two really fun characters who you really feel like are lifelong friends bust each other's balls, solve crimes, and pretend for some dumb reason that one of them is psychic. Even though in this movie, did you recognize that at only one point do they make a reference to Sean being psychic?
Exactly. So, and honestly, like at this point, I'm like, all right, I forget what the plot is in the show. Do they know that he's not psychic? Like, do Lasseter and Jules know, or are they still at the point where they don't know and they're still keeping a secret?
So Juliet knows. Okay. Lasseter, and obviously his dad knows because his dad trained him and the whole time has been sort of like trying to steer him away from this. But the end of the show itself and leading into the first movie, the whole last season is them. They're about to get married or he's about to pop the question to her, and she realizes that he's a fraud, and it's a huge, huge deal. And then she inevitably, they find a way for them to have a resolution where she forgives him for that and realizes that he's done good with this thing, even though he's been basically lying and breaking the law largely to solve these crimes. It's not a great resolution, but you just kind of sweep it under the rug because you're like, whatever.
I mean, that's the show, right?
You also have to believe, you have to suspend disbelief that the entire Santa Barbara Police Department is stupid enough to believe that this guy's not just breaking into houses and figuring out shit before they get there. But it's a dumb, fun show. And so that's kind of just,
and you just that's honestly that. Like one of the great things about it is that like there's absolutely zero stakes. Like especially in this movie, there are no stakes. Like zero. They are face to face with like people who they're like, oh yeah, this could be the bad guy. Right. I'm in this mental hospital or whatever, or I guess maybe regular hospital. I forget what kind of hospital it is.
It's like a recovery hospital for bougie people. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And like they're stealing like medicinal stuff. They're stealing food out of the fridges, right? Like they're doing whatever the fuck they want. They're eating the ice chips. which is such a great bit.
Yeah, I know. Because of the sound effect, by the way. It's the fact that they put in the sound effect and whatever they're eating. If I ever get a chance to interview these guys, that's going to be question number one. What were the ice chips? Because they sound delicious. And that's not what ice chips sound like, but God bless him. That scene gets a laugh at me every single time that I watched it, which I watched it religiously 15 times. I watched it twice. There's a moment in it where they don't realize they're drugged. And he was like, he was like, you understand that there's a sign on the door that says this is a restricted area because this area is restricted. And James Roday, without missing a beat, is like, that sounds fair. Yeah. He's like, that sounds fair. Yeah. Like, why are we doing this? Why are we in here? But you're right. I mean, there are zero consequences. Even at the standoff at the end, they don't even try to make a point at saying these characters are, you know, in danger at all. They just keep adding more characters, including
crazier and crazier.
Yeah. Including Dula Hill's actual wife, who plays the girlfriend character. It's funny. Actually, I remember seeing her on Ballers. She plays a different character, and he plays a manager in that. And I was like, oh, that's cool that like he popped up in this. I love seeing him work, and I love seeing the guys pop up in other things. But I was fascinated by all of them. And so I looked up her and I was like, holy shit, her husband, that's her husband. That's awesome. And then the fact that he was able to get her in this is pretty cool because I think she's a great actress as well.
Yeah, she was great.
The movie itself, to me, like to be a little critical, feels a little disjointed. We start and I think largely, and I know it's largely based off the fact that Timothy Omensen is still suffering or recovering from the stroke that he had that precluded him from being a major part of the first movie. If you remember, I don't know if you saw Psych the movie, which is still available on Amazon Prime, and I highly recommend you go back and watch that because it's basically the whole point of it is just to have an homage to Gremlins, and specifically the beginning of Gremlins and not the rest of Gremlins, which is why I love Psych. Yeah. They spend a lot of money to recreate the opening scene from Gremlins, and then that is just the joke that runs through the entire thing. But of course, they tried to get him in, but I think prior to that filming, prior to figuring that out, he had had a stroke, bad stroke, and was only able to join that movie through like a fuzzy video conference because they had to. Yeah,
that's really interesting because I was trying to figure that out while watching Psych 2 because I could tell that there was something going on with Lasseter, and I was like, all right, why is he just in, like, why is he sitting down in the whole movie? Like, why are they having him not be active or do like his Lasseter thing, right, and be in the action? And that actually explains it entirely because feel somewhat weird.
I think his I'm not quite sure, but I think the left side of his body was paralyzed a little bit, and that's why he has his arm in a sling at the end there. And I do think he's had trouble walking, which is why I think that last shot where he actually stands up and says, you know, like tells Christy Swanson, the wife of Marlo character, that he loves her, is, for me, I like shed a tear. I was like,
yeah, wow, that's really beautiful. I did not know that.
Really great. I mean, they literally were like, we're going to do a second movie. Steve Franks, the creator, and all the crew were like, we want to do a second movie, and we have to just figure out a way to get him back into this. And so they, instead of shoehorning him in like they were forced to do in the production of the other one, they wrote the entire movie based around him being in bed so he could be in it, which is pretty fucking cool.
Wow, that's really cool.
And again, I think it is a little not to overly critique a show that it should never be critiqued because they're not trying to do anything serious.
It's not trying at all.
Right. But in not trying, that's where the beauty lies. But I think it was a little disjointed and a little confusing. I'm like, what is happening here? Why is he there? I think if he had been able to do a little bit more of the acting, they would have showed that first scene and we would have gotten a lot more of that because it just sort of starts in the middle of the first act toward the second act. You're like, wait, we're just starting here. But you know, it's Psych, so they'll just explain it away, and who cares? Because it's just it's just an excuse to get them to make some hilarious fun of Norwegian people in an ice bar, and then go to a cat cafe. Again,
another great scene. The thing I will say, because this is to your point of it being disjointed, right, it being a little bit confusing about what is going on. Right before this podcast, I started watching it again because I thought I missed something when I originally watched it because I was like, all right, so how did Lasseter get here? All right, he was shot. Like, when did they explain? And then while rewatching it and like re-going through the beginning of it, I was like, oh no, I saw everything that happened. It's just the fact that they rushed through this whole thing that is the big plot point of how we got here and what is going on.
Yeah, and they rushed through. Like, my first time watching it, I thought, I'm trying to look up the actor's name. There's a lot of obvious. I mean, this whole thing is cameos. I don't know if you recognize that or not, but
yeah, so I recognize a few. Joel McHale being the big one.
Joel McHale, huge. But more than that, what is his name? Damn it. I'm looking at the cast right now. The guy that plays Emil Hirsch, the doctor, was an actor that Dula Hill was on West Wing with. So they co-starred on West Wing for a long time. The girl who runs the cat cafe, Allison Miller, is currently on a show with James Roday Rodriguez on ABC. So they're co-stars on that show, which is why he makes that reference where he's like, why are you watching All of Us? Don't you know that ABC has a show that's newer and better? That's basically that's a rival that's show.
Awesome.
This is Us. Excuse me. That's a rival this show. This is Us. Yes. So it's always so fun for me because obviously to me the fun of Psych is the references that they make, and that's what really hooked me is that you can tell that these two lead actors and the writers of the show are 80s kids because every episode of the show has something to do with an 80s reference of here and there, and so catching all these references and then seeing them have their friends on and all these inside like cameos and stuff like that is always cool for me to see. And this whole movie is basically like kind of is just like that, really. It's kind of like an excuse just to get Tim Robinson like back on the screen and give him some, you know, and just hang out one more time. And that's what it feels like to me, is like, why not just make another movie?
No, the whole show feels, especially this movie, right, it just feels like you're hanging out. It feels like you're watching another extended episode of Psych. And like you're very much okay with that. Like it's definitely not perfect. There are definitely things in there where it's like, all right, we're having a little bit too much fun here because now we've lost the plot of what's going on. But like, you know, they do a good job of doing the main thing you want out of Psych, which is, hey, let's just make people laugh. Let's just let's just have fun. Let's just have a good time. Like even going through and rewatching some of the Yang stuff, right? Like those are probably the most like serious / intense episodes of Psych. Like those are the ones that have, I guess, actual stakes to them. But even with the stakes, it still feels so light in what's going on. It still feels like the stakes don't feel as heavy, you know. Like there's something about the show and something about the way they write it and something about the performance of both James Roday and Dulé Hill where like even in the serious moments you're still having a laugh, you're still having fun, you're still like not taking things too seriously, which works, I think, for the most part to the benefit of the show. And for me, like for this being the second Psych movie, I think they do such a good job of making it feel like a return. And I hope if they continue to do Psych movies that they always feel like this, like they always just feel like another longer episode of Psych that is, you know, making you feel the way you felt when we were binging or watching the original series.
I think that's what they're intending to do. I read something somewhere where the creator Steve Franks was like, I want to do 5. And you know, this movie was supposed to premiere on USA Networks and then it got moved, unfortunately, in my opinion, over to Peacock because I think it just kind of puts one more
barrier. It's going to get overshadowed.
Yeah, I think so. But to me, I think exactly what you're saying is, I have a theory on this. I think it's because the show obviously has a huge cult following, not the least of which, of course, I would like to say that you and I are now at the head of it. I think we are the...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but the show never reached a huge amount of popularity. And so I think... When shows break out and they get really, really big, I think people start it starts to become a different monster. And this show never hit that level of success. And that's no disrespect to Psych because I'm glad it stayed where it was at. Because if that had happened and the stars went on to do other things, it's so rare that they can come back after so many years and just nail the characters again. And that was one of the things that I was like apprehensive to watch this again. I was like, are they going to nail Sean and Gus? Is the Gus Sean back and forth? Is that going to feel like it did before? And that very first scene where Lasseter wakes up and they're over his bed, I'm like, nope, they nailed it. Yep, this is great.
They're here. Yeah,
it's a beat. Their timing is perfect. These guys.
The timing is so incredible. Like even when Gus comes in with like, come on, son. Like they hit all those same beats and all those same notes so incredibly well, and it somehow I feel like gets better and better and better the more and more they do it. Mm-hmm. And we've had 8 seasons of Psych. Like I don't think anybody out here is necessarily asking them to make more shows. But this is such an excellent way to do it. To your point, like, you know, I don't need another season of Psych. I will take Psych movies every couple years if they want to do that, because I think this is the perfect way to do it. We don't get tired out of it. I'm sure this is the thing that they want to do. Like this seems like every scene in this movie seems like they're having a blast making it, which I think is the thing that you want from the show or from this series. And so I'm definitely down for this. This is awesome.
Pardon me. There it is. I am there as well. And I love it. I love that it continues to be a vehicle for them to plug in people that they just want to work with from things that are bygone eras. One of the points you brought up was like the Yang trilogy, which features Ali Sheedy and Peter Weller. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with either of those actors, but they're both huge stars in the 80s. And Psych the whole point of one of the things that I think the creators did and the actors and the producers now who are James Roday and Dula Hill want was like, this gives us an opportunity to just work with people that we loved growing up. And so that's why there's so many 80s stars on the show, not the least of which is like Christy Swanson's on this. Do you know who Christy Swanson is?
No.
She was the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She did that movie. So she was huge in the late 80s, early 90s. She did a bunch of movies, but I think her claim to fame, the movie that sticks out in my mind at least, and chat, correct me if I'm missing any, is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which was a movie that did not do well in theaters, was an odd ass movie. It's near and dear to my heart because I remember watching this being like, okay, they made this movie. And then, of course, Joss Whedon gets Sarah Michelle Gellar together. They make the show, and the show was huge. And so when people think Buffy the Vampire Slayer, they think, oh, that was a great like CW show. And I'm like, no. It was a movie with Luke Perry and Christy Swanson and Rutger Hauer and the guy that played Pee Wee Herman way before it was the show. So FYI, but if they can do, yeah. And then another just quick shout out. There's two more cameos in this that I do want to shout out, which is Sarah Chalk. I think is how you say her last name. I've never said that person's name in my life. Who was, of course, from Scrubs, and she makes some fun Scrubs references to that. So she's
the nurse.
Yeah, she's another doctor, and she plays the nurse in this, but she was a doctor in this. In Scrubs.
Yes, I knew I recognized her, but I couldn't put my finger on it because Scrubs was a show that I watched, but like only when it was on TV. I never like was. Religiously following Scrubs, but I knew she looked familiar, and that now that I'm putting two together, that makes sense, and that makes her role even more awesome as the nurse in this.
And I want to give another shout out before we wrap it up to Kadeem Hardison is in this, and I don't know if you're familiar with him at all, but he was on a show called A Different World, and I fucking loved that show. It was a spinoff of The Cosby Show. So,
yes.
And it ended up being, if memory serves correctly, I don't want to get this wrong, but it ended up being not the oldest daughter.
Denise? What is
her name? Denise, who was played by not Zoe Kravitz, her mother. This is going to, I got to look this up real quick. Hold on.
Lisa Bonet.
Yes, it was Lisa Bonet who played one of the, she was one of the daughters in the Cosby Show, goes to college, and they made a show called A Different World, and I loved it. But after a while, I think she even left the show, and it became more about Kadeem Hardison's character, who was not, I'm going to get this wrong, Dwayne Wayne was the name of that character, and he had cool flip-up glasses, and he was in love with Whitney, and she was bougie, and then at the end, they get together, and it was one of the best scenes ever. You should absolutely watch this show, unless it's boring for you. Anyway, it's great that they got him in this, and it's so cool that he got an opportunity to work with all these guys, and blessing, I'm just saying right now, I hope they make 5 more movies, and I hope someday I cameo in this.
That would be my dream. To meet them, James Roday and Dula Hill, get to talk to them, right? And like me and you, right, as the head of the Psychos, you know, yes. I'll be the Dula Hill to your Sean Spencer. Perfect. You know, we'll get to talk to them, and we'll get to meet them someday.
I want cameo, this so hopefully. Bad. I want this. This is in the works. We've talked about this already. I'm willing to say it publicly. I don't even care if we fail at this. I'm trying to reach out to them to get them on We Have Cool Friends. Dude. And I know that they're way more busy than we are at doing stuff that's higher level productions. But if we can make that work, that would be so freaking
cool. That'd be amazing. I would absolutely love that.
You have to help me interview them. That would be amazing.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I'll just feed you ice chips off camera the entire time. It'll be a fun inside joke. Cool, man. Well, we talked about this a lot, and I really appreciate that. It's nice to have someone to speak with about my love of Psych. I'll probably be going back. By the way, I popped into my Amazon queue to see. I'm like, where did I leave off the last time I was watching it? Season 8. I'm already in season 8. I don't know how the fuck I do it.
There you go.
I started at the first episode, and I'm already all the way through 8 seasons of a 45-minute long television show. If you guys are out there, definitely give this, if you're Psych fans, FYI, you probably have already seen it, but definitely watch this. It's fun to see the cast back together. They haven't skipped a beat. Blessing, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks,
ladies and gentlemen. We will be back next week with something on Wednesday. It's probably KFAF next week. And then after that, I think we're back to Internet Explorers. Until then, we'll see you online.